Hey y'all, Scott Horton here. After the show, you should check out one of my sponsors, WallStreetWindow.com. It's a financial blog written by Mike Swanson, a former hedge fund manager who's investing in commodities, mining stocks, and European markets. Mike's site, WallStreetWindow.com, is unique in that he shows people what he's really investing in, updating you when he buys or sells in his main account. Mike's betting his positions are going to go up due to the Federal Reserve printing all that money to finance the deficit. See what happens at WallStreetWindow.com. In an empire where Congress knows nothing, the ubiquitous D.C. think tank is all. And the Israel lobby and their neocon allies must own a dozen. Well, Americans have a lobby in Washington, too. It's called the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. They advocate for us on Capitol Hill. Join CNI to demand an end to the U.S.-sponsored occupation of the Palestinians and an end to our government's destructive empire in the Middle East. That's the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. Hey ladies, Scott Horton here. If you would like truly youthful, healthy, and healthy-looking skin, there is one very special company you need to visit, Dagny & Lane, at dagnyandlane.com. Dagny & Lane has revolutionized the industry with a full line of products made from organic and all-natural ingredients that penetrate deeply with nutrient-rich ionic minerals and antioxidants for healthy and beautiful skin. That's Dagny & Lane at dagnyandlane.com. And for a limited time, add promo code SCOTT15 at checkout for a 15% discount.
So you're a libertarian, and you don't believe the propaganda about government awesomeness you were subjected to in fourth grade. You want real history and economics. Well, learn in your car from professors you can trust with Tom Woods's Liberty Classroom. And if you join through the Liberty Classroom link at scotthorton.org, we'll make a donation to support the Scott Horton Show. Liberty Classroom, the history and economics they didn't teach you.
All right, y'all, welcome back to the thing here. I'm Scott Horton. This is the Scott Horton Show. ScottHorton.org is my website. We're live here from noon to 2 Eastern Time on No Agenda Radio. Monday through Friday, less Thursday. That's Adam and John's show. All right, our last guest on the show today is the great Charles Goyette, formerly the most independent radio show host in America, and now the author of the excellent, highly recommended Bright Yellow Dollar Meltdown, and also what should have been, and I think that one was a New York Times bestseller too, and then the other one should have been, but somebody didn't notice or something, but anyway, it's still great, and it's red and blue and broke all over, and it's about how America got so screwed up and what can be done about it, and of course, the answer is simple. You just liberty, and then everything will work itself out kind of deal, you know, prices and all of that. Hey, Charles, welcome back to the show.
Scott, great to talk to you, bud.
I'm so happy to have you here. Listen, so I was watching these Republicans and Democrats talking to each other at this debate the other night. What's this, Obama and Romney, whoever they are. And anyway, so I was trying to watch, and I gave up after a little while because I just didn't have the stomach for it. But what they were talking about was how it's all China's fault, and something needs to be done about the yellow peril. And I was thinking, you know, there's something wrong with the economy, and the Republicans and the Democrats are blaming foreigners. I bet it's probably, you know, just 51% chance it's really their fault. And maybe I would ask you if you could straighten out the details for me.
I think you're right. When they start bashing foreigners, it's always, you know, it's like a stage magician with a sleight of hand. You know, don't look over here, look over there. You know, here's a little flourish over here, so don't watch while I'm palming the card with my other hand behind my back.
Well, and you know, when those little people are talking, I can't even understand what they're saying. I bet they're conspiring against me.
I'm telling you. But here's how bizarre this is, this world of fiat irredeemable currencies in which nothing has any value except the value that, you know, the governing classes or the monetary authorities think that it should have and stuff. Here we are. I mean, back up and just imagine you own a little Italian restaurant in the town where you live, and you've got people that come in every day for lunch, and they bring their family back for dinner, and they're your best customers, and when they walk in the door, you just start berating them, you know, pounding they're your best customers, and you're constantly fighting and squabbling at one another as though your objective is to drive them away. So here's China, you know, they fund our debts. Oh, let me even back up. They sell us stuff really cheap. They fund our debt. Now think about this. When the Federal Reserve the Federal Reserve is now the largest holder of U.S. government bonds. That means when the U.S. government, the Treasury, needs to borrow money, the biggest place that they have gone, biggest holder of those bonds is the Federal Reserve with something like $1.6 trillion worth of U.S. government debt, U.S. government bonds. China has somewhere over a trillion. So roughly, the Federal Reserve has half a trillion dollars more U.S. government bonds than China. But the difference is that when China buys bonds, loans money to the U.S. government, they do it with real money. They used real resources that somebody dug out of the ground somewhere in a real factory that took, you know, capital to build, real human labor, real design and stuff. They have money that they made by making real things with real resources and real labor that they sold, they earned the money, and then they loan that money to the United States government. They've done so to the tune of over $1 trillion. When the Federal Reserve buys government bonds, they do it with pieces of paper they printed up in the basement just that morning. So who is fleecing this country? I'm telling you, it's unbelievable. But it shows you how bizarre the global monetary system is of these fiat, these irredeemable paper currencies. Nothing has any value.
And that goes for China's currency too, doesn't it?
Yeah, of course. So you've got countries at one another's throats about what their exchange rate should be, what their value should be. It's the most absurd thing in the world.
And so in a sense, an
ounce of gold in China is exactly the same as an ounce of gold here. There's no squabbling. There's no fighting. There's no, but, you know, not bureaucrats clawing each other's eyes out to insist that theirs should be higher and the other should be lower or vice versa. So we're in a very, very bizarre world.
Mm-hmm. But so I think what you're teaching me here is that it isn't that Obama / Romney are, you know, necessarily completely wrong when they say, well, China's debasing their currency all the time and that's screwing up what we would like to the trade balance to look at or something like that. It's just that they're even more guilty of the same thing, so they should shut up.
What is QE1 and QE2 and QE3 and Operation Twist? What are all these things? These are all currency manipulations. What is the Plunge Protection Team? What is the Exchange Stabilization Fund? All of these things are devices to artificially manipulate the value of a currency. So, I mean, we do this hand over fist. I mean, we do it from early in the morning till late at night, manipulate, manipulate, manipulate. And you have to manipulate if you have a currency that's made up of nothing but paper and ink and is eventually going to resort to its commodity value, paper and ink, or actually now it's just digital bookkeeping entries, so it will resort to its ultimate fundamental value, commodity value of digital bookkeeping entries, which is nothing. So this is a game that goes on all the time, and we're as big a participant in this game of currency manipulation as anybody. But you imagine what these guys, Obama and Romney, both are talking about. They are effectively saying that Americans are buying things that are made in China for too little. And so here's Romney saying he's not going to raise taxes, right? But he is going to raise taxes because the first thing he wants to do when he gets into office is to raise taxes. Tariffs are a tax on what Americans buy when Americans buy something that's made overseas, in this particular case by China. He's raising taxes on the American people to do so. And the consequences of this are so much deeper than either of these geniuses recognize. When you have to pay more because Romney raised the taxes, raised the tariffs on cheap goods that you were going to buy from China, you have to pay more to buy those goods. Say it's tires, because that came up in the debate the other night.
Yeah, but we hardly buy anything from China, right?
You have to pay more to buy those things. Then all of a sudden you have less money in your wallet, in your bank account, to spend with the local restaurant, to save to educate your children, to go to a movie, to buy a new shirt and tie for the job interview. You have less money to spend on other things. And so what the government has done is they basically say, we're going to favor one group of people, the people that we're protecting them from having to compete. We're going to protect one group of people and charge everybody else in the economy, make everybody else in the economy suffer as a consequence. All the other people that would be competing for your dollars aren't going to get to compete because we're going to make you spend more money on products that you should be able to buy less expensively.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, but that's not exactly the same thing. So technically, under the Clintonian definition of raising taxes, he's not a liar.
Well, I don't know. It sounds like a lie to me. I mean, what you tell me, a tariff is not a tax, and
anyway, I'm just kidding. But obviously, the joke is that it's a tax on the Chinese, not on us. That's what they try to sell us.
Yeah, right. It's effectively the government raising the cost of living and therefore lowering the living standards of the American people. And it's the same old game. I mean, I've talked at length, and I think one of my books about sugar tariffs and so on. I mean, the idea is you got a few wealthy families, a few wealthy farmers. Sugar beet farmers and so on, and they use their collective influence to, buy off a few congressmen and stuff and get protection from cheap sugar. So the American people, every time the American people buy anything, they buy a candy bar, they buy any product that has a little bit of sugar in it, they buy soft drink, they pay more, they pay higher than the world price for the sugar in there, so that a few families in America can get a special sweetheart deal granted to them by their government.
Well, not only that, right? They actually don't even have sugar. They have corn syrup instead, and they get diabetes and die.
Yeah, you get a lot less consequences. It's not metabolized as well, we understand, and things like that. But the reason that they're able to get away with this stuff, it's the same old thing that Bastia recommended we think about years ago. The difference between a good economist and a bad economist is the bad economist thinks only about things that are visible, that are seen. And the good economist thinks about things that are unseen, that are not immediately visible or immediately apparent. So you have a few loud families that grow sugar cane, grow sugar beets, and they're very, very visible. You know, the fraction of a cent that you pay for a Coca-Cola or a piece of birthday cake, is not really visible. You people like you, all of the American people are dispersed, throughout 311 million of us, and we're getting chipped away a little bit here, a little bit there on everything we buy. But, are you going to spend $100,000 to hire a lobbyist to go buy a few congressmen so that they can stop, nickel and diming you over the course of a year for, $7 or $8 higher sugar prices? No. But the guys that stand to make millions of dollars with subsidies and protectionism, it's easily worth it for them to go out and spend a couple $100,000 buying congressmen. So they do. Well, this goes on in the foreign trade thing too. So the cost, maybe domestic tire makers don't want to compete. They haven't figured out how to produce a product less expensively with all the automation we have, they can't compete on price. So they go to the government and they say, we want you to protect us from having to compete. Now, how does America get great? How does commerce advance? Through competition, through people's ability to put a better product available, make a better product available at a superior price, innovations and so on. But here's an industry that says we can't compete. So we want the government to protect us from having to compete. So we'll make a lot of money because now we don't have to compete against anybody. We can set our prices. We don't have to compete. Meanwhile, the American people, all 311 million of the rest of us, are paying higher prices because the government decided to steer some money to a specific favorite group that is highly visible. And we're out here, we're not united. We don't have 311 million people willing to spend, thousands of dollars to fight the purchase of congressmen that the tire industry does. And so now all of our friends and neighbors in business in America have less money because we are spending money on a favorite industry that is politically connected, a bunch of cronies, instead of spending the savings that we would have by buying a superior product at a better price, instead of spending that additional money with other people in the economy that deserve to have jobs too, don't they?
Yeah. Well, I got one for you too, and I don't know if you and I have ever discussed this, but this is part of the scene unseen that I don't hear people talk about too much, really, but it's really important to me. I always think of Bill Hicks used to say, by the year 2000, all malls in America will be connected. And there will be a subculture of mall people who've never seen daylight and just walk around at 72 degrees shopping all day and whatever. And George Carlin had a thing, too, about this was proof that Americans are all just horrible, terrible people. They've taken this beautiful, pristine continent, they killed everybody who lived here, and then they covered the entire thing with box strip malls. Bed Bath & Beyond and Old Navy, after Bed Bath & Beyond and Old Navy, they've turned every single town into the exact same collection of strip malls, and they just destroyed everything. And people may not have those exact same values against, you know, big box strip malls that those two comedians have that I tend to share. But to me, it's just an example of, you know, the generations long bubbles and artificially low interest rates directing, you know, new bank credit into specific markets like commercial real estate for 20, 40 years in a row like that. That's been a big part. We don't know how it would have been without that. But what we do know is that if Bed Bath & Beyond ever wanted to make 700 new stores, they just walk right down to the Chase and get it. Right? And the same thing as if Bain Capital wanted to borrow a bunch of money in order to buy a successful company, saddle them with the debt, rape the company for all of their actual, you know, resources and whatever, and then, you know, like the mob would do, just burn the place down for the insurance on the way out kind of thing. They could have never done that other than the government was making it legal for Chase to give the money away free, basically, correct?
That is absolutely correct. God protect us from central planners, and there's no bigger central economic planner. Well, I mean, there was the Politburo in the Soviet Union. That was a pretty big central economic planner, I suppose, but, you know, we've got a bigger one here in the United States, and it's called the Federal Reserve. It's the biggest central economic planner in the world today, and they plan every aspect of our lives, and so, yeah, they make artificial credit conditions available to people, and so people go borrow money for, you know, assuming that you're looking at interest rates and what these interest rates say. The prices aren't just, you know, things made up out of nowhere. They reflect real conditions of supply and demand, and they contain real information. Real information is communicated in prices about how dear something is or how widely available it is. So here the Fed engineers interest rates to astonishing lows, down to 1%, holds them there for a year, and of course there is a run in the real estate market. And so you've got people buying more McMansions, but because of the artificial economic signals, they're buying more McMansions than the real amount of production or wealth in the economy would justify people buying. So you've got more and more people building, you know, building suburbs on the perimeters of Sunbelt cities like Las Vegas and Phoenix and all across the country. And you have more and more mall people building huge malls with big box retailers that are dependent on ever-growing suburbs on the periphery, and it's just like the dominoes start to fall when real conditions of credit eventually out, and we realize that we have been misled by the false signals about the availability of credit that have been engineered by the Federal Reserve. And I liken this in the dollar meltdown to the pirates in the old days. The easy way to capture a ship wasn't to go out and fight and die. You just built a phony lighthouse on a rocky shore, and so the ship's captain of the goods carrying ship saw the lighthouse, and he thought he was somewhere. He was lured to his doom by false signals from a fraudulent lighthouse. He'd crack up on the reefs, and the pirates would go down and just grab all the booty. And so that's what the Fed does. It sends false signals about the availability of credit, about monetary conditions to the entire economy. And it creates these massive distortions that end up victimizing us all.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, the way you explained it to me was, at least I understood it the best from you, because as an economist, I'm just a great anti-war guy. But I know a lot of you genius types, too. But the way you explained it to me one time, anyway, that I understood it visually, was since Nixon, 1971, and the final break from the phony partial gold standard of the time, there's been one giant bubble. And then, so that means, I guess... Yeah, the bubble that popped with the Volcker years at the very beginning of the 80s, and then the bubble that popped in 88, and then the bubble that popped in 92, the Gulf War bubble, and then the bubble that popped in the year 2000 at the NASDAQ and the Dow, and then the bubble that popped in 2008 with all the housing, whatever. Those are, believe it or not, little bubbles, as horrible as those catastrophes were for people. Those are little bubbles on the back of this one big dollar bubble that we're riding since 1971, and that thing is still to come due. And that's where we get back to China, and they're sitting on a lot of this debt, and they don't really have to, do they?
No, they don't. They don't have to keep buying our debt. They're victims of their friendship with us. I mean, they do have a problem if they don't keep making things and selling things. They've got a lot of people that moved from the countryside into the cities that, you know, should find themselves unemployed. It'd be a very difficult situation for the the governing classes of China. But the biggest bubble of all, you're right, is the United States government bubble, the treasury bond bubble. This is the last bubble to pop, and it's, it keeps showing signs it's going to burst any day. But I mean, eventually it will. Nobody knows the day or the hour, but we've had, a 30-year bond market bubble. I mean, if you look at, U.S. interest rates back 30 years ago, and you mentioned Volcker, 30 years ago, interest rates, 1981, September, August 1981, off the top of my head, the 10-year bond yield was about 16%. Today it's 2%. So all of these years, interest rates come down. That it's like a teeter-totter. If interest rates come down, that means the value of bonds is going up. So it's been a bond bull market that's gone on for 30 years thanks to the Fed's contrivances and artificial manipulation of credit conditions and the currency. And we're beating up China for currency manipulation. We have had 30-year U.S. Treasury bond market bubble in the making. And one of these days, the game's over. It's one of these days the bubble pops. And this is the big one. This is the granddaddy of them all. It's not just the dot-com bubble. It's not just the housing bubble. It's not just, a commodities bubble. I mean, this is the biggest of the big.
Well, and then, so is that how it starts, though? Is American politicians piss off Chinese politicians enough that they say, we're just going to dump all our treasuries and spend this money buying up minerals in Afghanistan?
Yeah, it could be anything. I mean, anything can trigger it, or in actuality, instead of a single triggering event, it could be a long chain of abuses such as we're seeing. But, clearly, it can be retaliation for a geopolitical standoff, picking sides in a domestic encounter. I mean, Mitt Romney's crazy enough to try to invade Moscow in the wintertime. He could try to do that, and it could change the world equation, right?
Yeah, so, I can't think of any reasons why not.
Yeah. It could be anything. But my view, Scott, is that it's already happening in slow motion. Mm-hmm. I mean, for many, many years, the world's central banks have been gold sellers. Now they're gold buyers. That means that they're using dollars, U.S. dollars that were their reserves. They held U.S. dollars as the reserves against which they issued their own currencies. They're using those dollars now to transfer into gold. And this is going, they're creating multilateral and bilateral agreements around the world to bypass the use of the dollar. Strange political bedfellows like the Chinese and the Russians are striking unilateral deals. You got the Gulf Cooperation Council. I mean, it's going on all over the world. They're finding ways to begin to bypass the U.S. dollar because everybody knows that, it's fiat currency, and we have created a situation of more debt than we can possibly ever pay, and that we will default on that debt.
Well, it's so important, too, that it's not a plot against us. We're making them do it. We're pushing all of these different powers together where they don't have a choice. What are we going to do? We're going to have to strike a grand bargain with our former foes.
I mean, isn't that peculiar? And here's all the chest-thumping Americans, that what do they expect people to take bad checks? When you get a check from somebody that you do business with or a friend or something buys something from you, and you get a check and it comes back marked insufficient funds, you feel that you've been wronged, and you have. But somehow Americans think that if they issue checks to the rest of the world that come back marked insufficient funds, it's the other guy's fault. What kind of absurdity is this? How did we become so crazy?
All right, well, now let me ask you this. Is there any kind of good monetary policy that could be implemented? Say if Ron Paul had won and he had, I forgot the guy's name, his choice. I'm sure you know the guy, famous investor guy, to be his sound money Fed chairman. Could they fix this thing, or it's way too late? We're completely screwed.
Well, it's way too late in a sense. I mean, the current debt is untenable, it's unsustainable, and it will be defaulted on. It's only a question of whether we do it in a way that allows us to restore our prosperity right away, gets the crisis. Look, we're this December, in a couple of months, we're 60 months since the recession started. We're 5 years into this thing, and we still have depression-era levels of unemployment. They won't let the malinvestment get cleared out. They won't let the malinvestments be liquidated. So we drag this thing out. Of course, Jim Grant and Ron Paul could advance policies that would allow us to get through this period and reassert our prosperity and the American dream in no time. I mean, you know, sure, it'd be a year of unhappiness, but we've had 5 years of unhappiness now. The truth is that, you know, that there is a self-correcting, autodynamic quality to a free economy. People work and do things and make decisions to create prosperity for themselves. And the state only reflects the aggregate of 311 million people doing those things. All the state needs to do is get out of the way. If there's a political solution, the one political solution I think that would be helpful is if we would repeal the legal tender laws that prevent an alternative currency from evolving, so that when the dollar does fail, it'll be like sand in the gears of commerce and nothing will work and we'll all be impoverished because trading will grind to a halt.
All right, everybody, that's the heroic Charles Goyette, charlesgoyette.com. Read The Dollar Meltdown and Red and Blue and Broke all over there. Both such great books. You'll learn so much, I promise you. charlesgoyette.com. Thanks so much for your time, Charles.
Great to speak with you, Scott. Bye.
Appreciate it. All right, everybody, thanks for listening. See you Monday. This October 15th through 19th, the Future Freedom Foundation and the Young Americans for Liberty present the College Civil Liberties Tour, The War on Terrorism, Civil Liberties, and the Constitution, featuring from the left, the heroic Guardian columnist Glenn Greenwald, on the right, former Deputy Attorney General Bruce Fein, and the libertarian leadership of this new realignment, the great Jacob Hornberger, president of the Future Freedom Foundation. That's October 15th through 19th at colleges across the western U.S. Check out fff.org/collegetour. HTML for more details. Hey everybody, Scott Horton here. Ever think maybe your group should hire me to give a speech? Well, maybe you should. I've got a few good ones to choose from, including how to end the war on terror, the case against war with Iran, central banking in war, Uncle Sam and the Arab Spring, the ongoing war on civil liberties, and of course, why everything in the world is Woodrow Wilson's fault. But I'm happy to talk about just about anything else you've ever heard me cover on the show as well. So check out youtube.com/Scott Horton Show for some examples, and email scott@scotthorton.org for more details. See you there. Ben Franklin said, "Those who are willing to sacrifice essential liberty for a little temporary safety deserve neither." Hi, Scott Horton here for the Bill of Rights Security Edition from SecurityEdition.com. It's a playing card-sized steel Bill of Rights designed to set off the metal detectors anywhere the police state goes, so you can remind those around you the freedoms we've lost. And for a limited time, get free shipping when you purchase a frequent flyer pack of 5 Bill of Rights Security Edition cards. Play a leading role in the security theater with a Bill of Rights Security Edition from SecurityEdition.com. Hey everybody, Scott Horton here for LibertyStickers.com. If you're like me, then you're right all the time, surrounded by people in desperate need of correction. Well, we can't all have a radio show, but we can all get anti-government propaganda to stick on the back of our trucks. Check out LibertyStickers.com. Categories include anti-war, empire, police state, libertarian, Ron Paul, gun rights, founders quotes, and of course, the stupid election. That's LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck.